40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports. Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's kick off in Santa Clara, California, where the United States will host Jamaica Wednesday evening in the CONCACAF Gold Cup football final. The Reggae Boys of Jamaica upset defending Gold Cup champion Mexico 1-0 in the semifinals, while the USA beat Costa Rica 2-0. The Americans have been on a 13-match unbeaten streak since Bruce Arena was named head coach for a second time last November when he replaced Jurgen Klinsmann. Veteran goalkeeper Tim Howard talks about the team's recent success.
You know, I think it's certainly a testament to, you know, Bruce and his coaching staff, and obviously the commitment that the players have put in since Bruce took over again. And we're proud of that fact. We're proud of winning games and, you know, keeping this thing rolling.
If Tim Howard and the USA can roll to another victory against Jamaica on Wednesday night, the Americans would lift their sixth Gold Cup trophy. Only Mexico, with seven titles, has more at this regional tournament for teams in North America, Central America, and the Caribbean. The Reggae Boys of Jamaica, meanwhile, are bidding for their first Gold Cup championship. Coach Arena, what are Jamaica's weaknesses?
Weaknesses? It can't be too many if they made it to the final. You know, they played Mexico twice, didn't lose them. They have a strong team. We'll be ready to play.
Meanwhile, veteran American striker Clint Dempsey will also be ready to play against the Reggae Boys. In the semifinals, Dempsey scored his 57th international goal, tying him with Landon Donovan for the USA's all-time career goal-scoring mark. Hey, Clint, what do you expect from the Jamaicans?
It's going to be a difficult game. Jamaica's been good throughout this tournament. They haven't conceded many goals. They're very athletic and, you know, been able to create some good opportunities and score themselves. So it's going to be a tough game. We're going to have to be at our best. But if we're at our best, I think we can get the job done.
Clint Dempsey and the Americans will try to get the job done Wednesday night against Jamaica. The 34-year-old Dempsey has made 136 international appearances for the United States. There was a lot of doubt whether Dempsey would even play for the USA this year. As he mentioned on Monday's show, Clint had two procedures for an irregular heartbeat last year.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the biggest thing is being able to come back from two heart procedures, man, and to be still playing at this level when you didn't know if you're going to have much time left to be playing the game, and to be able to tell my kids that right now I'm tied for the most goals ever scored for his country. That's something, a little kid, you know, when I grew up in Nacogdoches, that was a big dream to try to get there, you know. For me, it was always trying to play in the World Cup and represent your country, but to be able to have played in three World Cups and to say that I'm one of the leading goal scorers of all time for the U.S., I mean, that's something that's very special.
As Clint Dempsey said, he grew up in Nacogdoches, Texas. And as a young boy, Clint played soccer with some of the area's large population of Hispanic immigrants. Here in the USA, soccer continues to gain in popularity among American youth, both boys and girls. Behzad Mohammadi filed this report on a youth soccer tournament in Virginia.
Because I feel it's more fun to watch. It's more fast-paced than the other sports.
All these kids love the game.
Vioe asked one of them, how do you see yourself in 5 years?
Still playing soccer.
Coach Mike Dempsey is pleased with their performance.
You know, in general, youth soccer today it's good. It's never been better. I think there's so many good players in America now compared to 10 years ago.
The U.S. national men's team has never won a World Cup. In fact, from 1950 to 1990, the American men's team never even qualified. But in the last few decades, the U.S. team has vastly improved. Dempsey credits increased interest among youth.
Generally speaking, the status of soccer in the States is good because we've been developing players and doing something right for a number of years.
Is that enough for a championship team?
We're still a bit behind technically, but again, we're growing, you know, each year, and we're trying to mimic, in some ways, a lot of the European models.
Cardinals on three! 1, 2, 3, Cardinals!
These young boys may join professional teams when they grow up, according to league manager Mark Lokay.
I think we'll have more success in the future. The club teams are starting to grow. The U.S. soccer teams are starting to grow. So I think things look good for the future.
Denise believes that one day the U.S. men's team will become world champions.
Maybe a decade or so, maybe in a couple of years, because we don't know because the generations are still coming. We might have a strong team next couple of years and then have a weak team. So, yeah, it depends.
What needs to be done to become a champion?
Practice more and work on individual skills.
Yama and his friends are doing just that, and they are winning. They recently earned the top spot in prestigious tournament. Behzad Muhammadi for VOA News, Washington.
The Voice of America, VOA.
Mates, remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right, give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively sunny man on the sunny side of sports, right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoje here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brillafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
The National Basketball Association will hold its second big exhibition game in Africa, NBA Africa Game 2017, on August 5th in Johannesburg, South Africa. Amadou Gallo Fall is the NBA's vice president and managing director for Africa. In this encore sunny side of sports presentation, let's listen in again as Amadou tells us we're going to see more and more African players in the NBA in the future.
There's a growing number of players from Africa in the continent, but I'm really excited about the opportunity now that the NBA Africa Academy presents to, you know, not only go out and identify young elite talent from across the continent, but get them in a place where they will undergo elite world-class type of training, because we've hired NBA coaches, NBA trainers, physiotherapists, and they will be given all the tools to really maximize their potential. So the number of players from Africa in the continent in our league is only going to continue to grow, and they will come in with better skills, they will be better prepared. And, you know, to note also that they will be going to school. So when I talk about the holistic approach, this, we are going to teach these, you know, young people the fundamentals of the game, but we parlay it with important life skills that would help them to grow to be complete human beings.
Amadou, during the NBA All-Star Weekend in New Orleans, Commissioner Adam Silver announced the NBA will be returning to Johannesburg for the NBA Africa Game 2017 on August 5th. Can you talk a little bit about that contest and maybe a few of the players who will be participating?
Very exciting announcement during All-Star Weekend. And again, you know, from Commissioner Stern before to now Commissioner Silver, there's always been a very strong commitment to the continent, you know, and I think it helps our work to have senior leadership behind our efforts and see the, you know, the opportunity here to grow something special. So we hosted the first ever NBA game on the continent in 2015, in August 1st, here in Johannesburg. We're very excited to have the opportunity to do it again, moving to a bigger venue at the Ticket Pro Dome. Team Africa versus Team World. We're going to have a constellation of stellar players in, you know, the two different sides. But most importantly, the excitement is around all the great community work that is going to be taking place. You know, the game is going to benefit some, you know, global and local charities. And our players, both the African players and the players from the rest of the world, are very excited to be coming again. We've announced a couple of them just, you know, as beginners. Emmanuel Mudiay from the Democratic Republic of Congo, one of the, you know, young, bright stars, you know, that is going to be in the league for years at the point guard position playing for the Denver Nuggets. We have also Bismack Biyombo, who played in the first game. He's from DRC also.
Voice of America.
Amadou, the Voice of America has a huge audience in Nigeria, Africa's most populous country. And I've had several Nigerians tell me how they'd love to see the NBA Africa game go to Nigeria. What's your reaction?
Look, Nigeria is an extremely important market for us. We right now have a program in Abuja in partnership with ExxonMobil called Power Forward, going into year four. So, you know, the presence is there. And when I talk about earlier that long history that the league has with the continent, Nigeria comes top of mind. Obviously, this is the home of Nigeria gave us Hakeem Olajuwon, a top 50 greatest of all time. And we've had a number of other players that have played in the league, your Obinna Ekezi, Julius Nwosu, and you have a host of young players right now who are Nigerian descent. One of the brightest stars in our league, Giannis Antetokounmpo, who plays for Greece, but, you know, obviously his family is from Nigeria. So we're looking forward to continuing to, you know, bring programming into Nigeria. You know, obviously we know that we count them amongst our, you know, biggest fans. Our broadcast partner, Kwese, has a huge focus on Nigeria. And I'm very glad that our fans are able to watch NBA games and NBA programming across the multiple platforms that Kwese has in Nigeria. And this Africa game coming up will be broadcasted live there. So it's just a matter of time. But there's, you know, certainly we're excited about all the great things and activities we can bring to Nigeria in the future and what we are doing right now.
Many African youth grow up playing with some type of ball. Often they're kicking the ball, soccer or football, very popular in Africa. Can you make some general comments about the growth of basketball in Africa since you've been involved with the NBA's organizational efforts? How has it grown on the continent?
I think when we talked about, you know, our Basketball Without Borders program, which remains the flagship grassroots initiative we have on the continent, and you see the growing number of African players coming in the league, you know, you could see a big signal. And now with the launch of NBA Academy Africa, as I said, now no longer, you know, these young players will just make it by luck, but there's going to be more of a predictable path to their growth and development. And we have a junior NBA platform, this league that we are launching in multiple countries. This is the base of the pyramid. It's about making the game accessible to young boys and girls. And once you do that, obviously, you know, the fan base grow, the number of participants in the sport grow, and talent emerge. So the game is growing. It's the number two sport globally. It is the number two sport on the continent. And I'm really excited and fortunate to be in a position to continue to, you know, lead the charges and drive our travels across the continent. So there's tremendous momentum and interest among young people in our sports. So the future of basketball is extremely bright on the continent.
Amadou Gallo-Fall, leading the NBA's charge in Africa. Thank you very much for talking with us on the Sunny Side of Sports and the Voice of America.
Thank you, Sunny, and best of luck.
Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Good to be here with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending on this Tuesday?
Well, a big new report is shedding some light on some of the perils and health problems that come with playing professional football here in the U.S. The new report from the New York Times is called 110 NFL Brains, and it details a study from neuropathologist Dr. Ann McKee that she published in the Journal of American Medical Association. Now, Dr. McKee, who is one of the experts in CTE, or chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is the disease that a lot of football players end up getting, she's an expert in this, and she examined the brains of over 200 deceased football players, including 111 who played in the National Football League. And according to her report, of those 111 brains of former NFL players that she looked at, 110 had evidence of CTE, that disorder that's caused by brain trauma, that's caused by concussions, that a lot of people say football has directly caused or contributed to in a lot of these players. And it causes things like neurological problems, memory loss, depression, dementia, and can cause death, early death for a lot of these players. So lots of reaction to this as she publishes these findings. Very wide-ranging findings. Covers every position in football, in American football. Covers professional players, covers college players. In fact, 48 out of the 53 brains that she looked at from former college players also had evidence of CTE. And everybody from players who you would never know who played just a couple seasons of football to Hall of Famers like Super Bowl-winning quarterback Ken Stabler. So quite a wide range of players that she looked at. Now, these are brains that were donated by the families of these players, and the families donated them because those players had evidence of CTE. So there is a bit maybe of confirmation bias, what they call there. But still really jarring results from this study. People saying on social media that something has to change in the National Football League. Players are literally being killed by the sport they love. And you find a lot of parents on social media reacting to this, saying that they won't let their children play football, even youth football. out of fears of the damage that it might cause to their brains. So this is shedding light on this. This is something that's been talked about for years in the National Football League. You have a lot of football owners who say that there's no link between the head trauma that players receive and CTE, and this is shedding some light on that and starting and renewing that conversation over this disease.
One of our VOA colleagues, Andrew Molly King, a program analyst and parent here at the Voice of America, she read that report, and I'm looking at her comments now. She says, wow, I'm really glad my son stopped playing football in high school.
And that's the reaction you see from a lot of parents. They're saying nothing is worth it to have their children harmed by this and potentially have long-term devastating effects.
What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, no love for Kyrie in Cleveland, Ohio, at least not from LeBron James. The saga in Cleveland, as media reports that Kyrie Irving wants out of the Cleveland Cavaliers and he wants to go be his own star on his own team somewhere else without having to be in LeBron James's shadow. Quite a big shadow, because LeBron James is quite a titan of the game, and also he's very tall. But media reports are saying that LeBron is very unhappy with Kyrie Irving's desire to leave. Reportedly, LeBron has said that he wants to beat him up. Straight from the king's mouth, LeBron tweeting just this morning saying, hashtag not facts, people, boo, get another source. So LeBron shooting that rumor down. And then another report says that LeBron is actually eager for Kyrie to leave. He doesn't want this drama. LeBron tweets about that and he says, hashtag not facts, people, boo, get another source. And this tweet he adds, hashtag enjoying my summer, hashtag you do the same. So striking out against those critics, the rumors that are floating around. A lot of people noting that hashtag not facts, that sounds like something President Trump might say. He's a fan of using the term fake news. So LeBron using that term, a lot of people noticing that, but drama, drama, drama in Cleveland. Nobody knows what's true, what isn't. Should Kyrie go? Should he stay? Should he get out? What is LeBron thinking? This is all swirling in the offseason there of the National Basketball Association on social media. But at least we have the confirmation from LeBron that those two reports were not true.
And Kyrie Irving, great player, one of the best guards in the NBA. He apparently has demanded a trade, but he's under contract to the Cavaliers, and they don't have to trade him. I mean, it's perfectly within their right to say, well, I think we're going to keep you here.
And that's going to be the interesting thing. If he does stay in Cleveland after all of this drama in the offseason, what happens there? And then on top of that, you have Derrick Rose coming to the Cleveland Cavaliers. So that adds another element, another player into the mix. So it's going to be a very interesting season. We talk about how there's kind of the lulls in sports when the sports aren't actually playing, when it's the offseason. And LeBron and Kyrie have made sure that there's no lull in the National Basketball Association. People are still talking about the NBA, even though the season is not happening yet.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. We have about a minute left in the program. Andrew, what else is trending?
Well, there's a feeling that I think a lot of sports fans have experienced at one time or another. I certainly have as a fan of the New York Mets, and that's when your team doesn't do very well, and you say, God, what am I doing here following this team? And for one frustrated fan of the Toronto Blue Jays in Major League Baseball, he actually said, you know what, I'm ditching the team and I want to find a new one, and he did it on social media. So he tweeted out, he said, hello, my old team has failed me, so whoever replies first is my new favorite team. Let the team war begin. You had the Cincinnati Reds posting a GIF of their star first baseman Joey Votto, who is Canadian. You have the New York Yankees sending out a GIF of their star outfielder Aaron Judge crushing a home run at Yankee Stadium, and they write, yeah, if this didn't do it, we've got nothing for you. And other teams like the St. Louis Cardinals, Texas Rangers, Colorado Rockies, all tweeting at this fan trying to win him over. Quite a lot of attention for a fan. It's pretty nice. But it seems that the big winner is the Miami Marlins. They asked him point blank, did we win? And the fan says, yes, congrats. So a lot of attention on this. A lot of people saying that this fan is a fair weather fan. He doesn't deserve to be a fan of a team if he's just leaving them because they have a bad record. And the funny thing, Miami and Toronto have about the same record. So he's not really trading up there.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Sonny.
And that wraps up the July 25th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In early July, President Donald Trump announced an additional nearly $639 million of humanitarian aid for the estimated 20 million people affected by food insecurity and violence in Somalia, South Sudan, and Yemen. Tens of millions of people are in need of humanitarian assistance as a result of the man-made crises in South Sudan, Nigeria, and Yemen, all of which are driven by violent conflicts. And in Somalia, where ongoing conflict is exacerbating the effects of severe and prolonged drought, said Acting Assistant Administrator for the USAID's Bureau for Democracy, Conflict, and Humanitarian Assistance, Robert Jenkins. Despite the influx of aid that has helped to alleviate famine in some areas of South Sudan, and has so far prevented famine in Yemen and Somalia, the overall food security situation is worsening, and life-threatening hunger continues to spread in both scope and in scale. In all four countries, conflict has been the primary driver of humanitarian need. In Somalia, conflict has made it difficult to reach some communities in dire need of food. In South Sudan and Yemen, civil wars have destabilized the economies, crippled agricultural production and trade, and sent the price of food skyrocketing. In Somalia and Nigeria, the regions that have been beset by violent terrorist groups, Al-Shabaab and Boko Haram and ISIS West Africa, respectively, are among those in the greatest need of humanitarian assistance. Through this additional funding, the United States can provide emergency food and nutrition assistance, life-saving medical care, improved sanitation, safe drinking water, emergency shelter, hygiene and health programs to treat and prevent disease outbreaks, and protection for civilians who've been affected by conflict, including both those displaced internally and as refugees. This additional funding brings the total U.S. contribution to over $1.8 billion in humanitarian assistance for the four famine crises since the beginning of fiscal year 2017, said Mr. Jenkins. We will continue to work with our international and local partners to provide this life-saving aid needed to avert famine and to support communities impacted by these crises.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
VOA. To our audience on VOA's FM in Accra, Ghana. We are happy to announce that VOA's FM station 98.1 is back on the air with all your favorite news and programs. Tune in every day, 24/7. You can also listen to VOA's radio programs on shortwaves, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are online at voanews.com.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss Rwanda's August 4th presidential election. Incumbent Paul Kagame is widely expected to win another term. The amended constitution allows him to remain in power until 2034 if he pursues it. A preview of Rwanda's presidential election.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.